if you are located outside of the European Union, the United Kingdom and or Switzerland, then you need an authorized representative. So, I have a good news. You have found it with Easy Medical Device. And if you are also in need of an importer in Europe and in Switzerland, then contact us definitely at info@easymedicaldevice.com. info@easymedicaldevice.com, and I'm sure we can help you. Welcome to the Medical Device Made Easy podcast. I am Mounir Elazouzi, a medical device expert specialized on quality and regulatory affairs. My mission is to help you learn how to place a compliant medical device on the market. For that, I share with you my experience and the one of others on this podcast. Are you ready for your dose of regulation and standards today? Okay, so let the show begin. Welcome to the Medical Device Made Easy podcast. Here is Mounir Elazouzi from easymedicaldevice.com. And today we'll talk about sterilization. Not all sterilization, just the radiation sterilization. So, and I have with me, Adam Izakrai, that is a consultant at the Other Consultants. So hi, Adam. Well, how are you?
Hello, Mounir. Good. How are you?
Good,
nice
good.
To see you again.
Thank you. So you are part of the podcast many times. So if people want to go and check that, they are available on the podcast webpage.
All right.
So before we can start to dig on this radiation sterilization, because apparently there are some changes also, can you make a small introduction of yourself so that people know better of who you are?
Sure, thanks. So my name is Adam Isaacs-Ray. I am a consultant in the medical device industry. I work with manufacturers, quite a lot of small manufacturers as well, to kind of help them prepare, get ready for kind of notified body, UK approved body inspections, kind of prepare technical documentation, as well as do like a lot of quality system stuff, as well as kind of regulatory strategy planning. Also work and do certification audits for 13485. On behalf of a certification body at points as well. So I kind of see both sides of I get audited as well as I do auditing, which gives me quite a nice unique view. Sterilization has been something that I've been kind of working with a lot in the last few years, especially amongst the kind of lower class devices, which we're going to be discussing today.
Great. So when we talk about sterilization, as we said, so we'll talk specifically about radiation sterilization. If people are interested about this topic, what are the standards or the guidances that they have to look at? So is there like some documents that they have to maybe get to understand more about what are the requirements for this kind of sterilization?
Yeah, so I think the kind of one of the main ones that's kind of just came out recently has been Commission Implement Decision 2024-815, which was like last week or last month, I believe.
There's
like
what is it
very,
again?
Very recently. The implementing decision for harmonized standards of
I remember,
So just dead recently. So that has harmonized 11137 part 2, which is sterilization of healthcare products, radiation, that is basically where you kind of, this says requirements for validation, routine control of a sterilization process. That is how a manufacturer gives it's really good document actually, this, like, to provide guidance to a manufacturer on how to establish that, you know, that process, all the process parameters that need to be considered, developing a specification for sterilization. That was part one. Part two is the one that was just harmonized. The part one was harmonized in 2021. But part two is harmonized. That's how to establish a sterilization dose. So that goes through very detailed examples of methods on how to establish a sterilization dose for a particular product. Obviously, each product is going to require different levels of sterilization. They're kind of all trying to get towards one level of sterility assurance level for terminal sterilization, which is 10 to the minus 6. Aseptic processing typically gets to like 10 to the minus 3, which is like less sterile, but you know, sterility is not an absolute term. So that's kind of terminal sterilization tries to get to 10 to the minus 6, and you have your kind of sterilization dose, which you use ISO 11137 part 2 to define how you're doing that.
Okay. And so those standards, they are mainly, if you have just those standards, it's sufficient for you to make this process. But when you are saying harmonized. Maybe some people are here saying, what are we talking about here? What means harmonized? They were existing before, but now they are harmonized. So can we maybe just precise that for people? Because I have a lot of people that have this question when they have received some comments from Notified Body to say, oh, you should have used an harmonized standard. But at the end, it's the same. It's just putting an EN in front of it. So it's
pretty much. So, yeah, that is quite true. For people, I suppose, not working in it. So for us, harmonized standards are essentially a standard that has been recognized by the commission as saying you can apply this standard. This is the standard that should be used as part of conducting, say, in this case, sterilization. ISO 13485 is a harmonized standard that should be used to implement your quality system. There's a massive debate. You've seen it, I've seen it, on whether you need to use a harmonized standard or not. You know, like, it's a standard, it's voluntary kind of thing. Typically, the way I lean upon it is a harmonized standard should be used, but should be more of a shall. And if you don't use it, you need to have a very, very strong justification of why you're not using it. You know, because essentially the notified body will assess you against that harmonized standard. So they say it's the best practice to implement for a certain process.
Yeah, and I have also some notified bodies that, because we had some questions, to say, yes, I have there is an harmonized standard, but it's harmonized under MDD and not MDR. So I should maybe not use that. And said notified body say, no, you have even to use the one under MDD. So it harmonized under MDR, they are in progress. It's not finished. So they are coming one after the other. But yeah, if you it's harmonized under MDD, so most likely it will be harmonized under MDR also. So you have mandate to use that. Okay, so in terms of sterilization, we have many products that can be sterilized. We have specifically the products that are class 1. So class 1 that are sterilized become class 1S. So class 1 sterilized. I mean, you will never see class 1S on the MDR. So just for people, because people say, I cannot see this 1S or 1M or 1R. No, we just created that for making it simple. So it's class 1 delivered in a sterile condition. So it's why we call it class 1S. So in terms of that, so the notified body is coming to check just the sterilization process for this class 1 device. So what will they look at then for this kind of products? So are those products different than the others in terms of sterilization or not?
So the route to conformity is the kind of only thing that really changes for this. So it's still expected that a class 1S or 1M or 1R product, for example, has everything that a normal medical device needs to have, basically, you know. So it must have a full technical document, must have a quality system in line with 13485, Article 10, 9, you know, everything should essentially be the same. The thing that changes it for the kind of 1S devices, and this is same in the EU MDR as well as UK MDR, is that kind of conformity assessment route. Under MDR and UK MDR, it very much focuses and stays in the standard, the regulation, sorry, that the elements of assessment are limited to those related to an MDR's establishing, securing, and maintaining sterility conditions. And then UK MDR, previously the MDD, talks about those methods of obtaining to sterility. So that basically means that the notified body, you still have to have a notified body for 1S. You're not like a kind of self-certified device. You can't, you need to have something.
Yeah.
You need to appoint one. They need to be a notified body, obviously, that has the codes to do a sterilization for that type. So notified bodies have different codes. Some of them can only do, you know, say radiation or dry heat, moist heat, aseptic. So it needs to be relevant for that type. So in what we are discussing today, they would have to have the relevant codes for a sterilized process for radiation. But that they will only be able to assess elements of your device relating to sterility. So they can't, in theory, go into absolutely everything. It's very much limited to those particular sections relating to establishing, maintaining sterility.
So when we say that they will be looking at that, so what then as you said, we should prepare the technical file, quality management system and everything, but which document or which element specifically they will look at that we should maybe take 10 times more, maybe 10 more times to look at it and to have a scrutiny on it than the others?
So the probably should have mentioned earlier, and the other two key standards with this are as ISO 11607,
okay,
which is packaging for terminally sterilized products, and then 11737, which is determination of kind of bio burden for sterilized products. With that, basically, because those elements can be limited to sterility, that is essentially what we would create then, what I kind of call, and I think a lot of people are working at, like a sterilization master file.
Okay.
And that is basically, there's not really, FDA have released some guidance on this, because they released some guidance on this a few months ago around what needs to go into it, but there's not really a lot of guidance on what needs to go into a sterilization master file. It's extremely subjective, which is quite challenging for manufacturers, and I found it really challenging because each notified body obviously have different expectations. Each kind of reviewer from each notified body or a UK approved body will have different expectations. You know, some will expect you to submit risk management stuff, some won't, you know. So the only guidance that is given from the regulation is, you know, MDR limited to aspects relating to establishing, securing, and maintaining sterile conditions. That's it. There's not a lot of guidance there.
Okay.
And much the same UK MDR. Generally, the items that go into it would be everything related to your sterilization process. So it's going to be who is doing the sterilization for you. So if you're getting it outsourced, say Steris, you need to get evidence of the validation for that sterilization process. You know, manufacturing process is very relevant as well, because that's where you're going to be kind of collecting your bioburden samples from. Understanding, like, you know, I always find a flow chart, manufacturing flow chart, is, I think it's part of every kind of technical document now, but a summary of your manufacturing process should definitely form part of this sterilization master file, to kind of give that reviewer the understanding of what the process begins with, at what point it's you're sterilizing it, so they can see, well, once you've sterilized it, is it exposed any further, what's all the bioburden when you're doing your counts and stuff like that.
Can you just precise maybe for people, what is bioburden? Because maybe people hear this word that they say, okay, what are we talking about here?
Hey, just a second. Do you need an EU, Swiss or UK representative? Then choose Easy Medical Device. We can represent you and also become your importer. Contact us at eo@easymedicaldevice.com.
So bioburden is essentially the level of kind of microorganism growth on a particular kind of item at a time. So when you're making stuff, it's basically kind of bacteria in that sense. So it's basically when you're making stuff in a factory, you know, like it's kind of going to be, say, we'd say contaminated, but it's not like contaminated from a 1345 perspective. It's just not sterile. And that is what you're essentially trying to bring down as part of your sterilization process. So it builds, if you imagine it kind of building, like kind of, you know, like if you imagine like a full petrol tank of bioburden, then you want to sterilize it, which brings it down. And then once you sterilize it, you want to see the regrowth of that to see if anything comes back on it, or if you've killed it, then you kind of want to be able to make sure that you've got that to a certain level of, and that's where you get the term sterility assurance level from there. So on that note, as part of your sterilization master file as well, everything to do with your bioburden data. So bioburden data, bioburden validation, kind of documentation and recovery information on that. So basically a bit of everything, you know, on what how you measure it, who measures it, competencies for people that measure it as well can be quite important, depending on that review. But that can, it's also more likely for that to be assessed and kind of auditing, for example. Dose mapping as well is incredibly important, because they want to make sure, you know, when you're sterilizing something, if you've got a batch of them, you need to make sure that each product within that batch, depending on the configuration, the shipping layout, that's all been, you know, they're all getting the relevant sterilization dose to meet that sterility assurance level that you've got.
So for that, I think you put like some indicators in different corners, if I can say, of the things, and you see if all those indicators were exposed. So if all those indicators were exposed, means everything was exposed also. So
yeah,
this is mainly the idea.
Correct. So dosimeters, basically they're called. So you put the dosimeters at relevant points through your validation. So you do this when you're establishing your sterilization dose, kind of before you're doing that sterilization, and then you take a read on it and see what they're indicating. You know, and make sure that basically each point is hitting that right level of sterilization, and then you're sure what's going on after that, and then you can start to sterilize, do your dose verification experiments as part of that. And then other information on that as well on dose mapping is going to be, you want to submit your dose audits. So dose audits need to be conducted. I think you and I have spoke to quite a lot of people on this, I think, in the Easy Medical Device and the WhatsApp chats. I think quite a lot of people ask these questions on kind of dose audits. The dose audits, basically the 11137 standards, kind of go a lot into really good detail on what your dose audit should look like and what the frequency should be and stuff like that. So basically they summarize that it should be 3 monthly.
Okay.
Unless you have a rationale prepared. So typically at first in an immature sterilization process, you would do a dose audit every 3 months and make sure everything looks good, sterilization's okay, dose mapping's fine, irradiation certificates all, you know, look fine. Much like kind of risk-based audits, you can then, the standard also allows for you to increase the time between those dose audits. But it does give you conditions on when and what you need to do to be able to do that. And it specifies that basically you can only have an increase, for example, unless you've had 4 consecutive dose audits, that the outcome of those dose audits have not required more sterilization or sterilization dose re-establishment. And then if you have that, then you can write a little note to file and say, this is good, we can increase this, so you don't need to do them every 3 months, you can do them every 6 months or every 9 months, whatever.
When you said those audits, so do you have to destroy the products, or how you do that?
So it's basically as part of a normal sterilization, you would just kind of assess, like, a bit, instead of just doing your sterilization, checking your dose meters, you would go a bit more into detail on it. It can be destructive depending on how you want to do it. But you know, it goes a bit more into detail, and it just needs to be essentially a process audit of how you're doing things at that time. So you would check your calibration of everything, which should be done anyway. But it's just a bit more of a detailed documented look at everything. With, you know, and you would still get your irradiation certificates at the end of it, as well, you know, but it's basically a way of, they call it, under the standard, that comes under the section routine control.
Okay.
Is what they call it. So it's routine control of a validated process, essentially. And then as you can increase it, because your process is becoming more stable, mm-hmm. If you're not able to kind of intervene with it too much.
Okay.
All right. And then other information that I think we need to kind of mention as part of these kind of the sterilization master file, because it's just so subjective. One of the key ones is the dose substantiation rationale. So you need to outline the process of how you've established that sterilization dose.
Okay.
Even from the standard says you can use VD max. So basically, you know, you take a sample item portion. So I'm going to try not to go into too much detail here. But, you know, depending on what it is, if it's a wipe, you're going to use that whole wipe. So sample item portion is one. You know, depending on what your device is, it changes. But the standards are excellent for giving the detail of it. They've got loads of good examples. But you need to basically highlight to the auditor and the reviewer what your dose is, how you've substantiated it, and all the rationale behind it. So they can understand and then assess from there, you know, that it makes sense.
Okay.
Other information, the reason I mentioned 11607, the packaging system, super important. They need to understand what the device looks like in its finished form. So they can understand, you know, so labels are always a good thing to try and include, so they can see what's on the label, some pictures of the device, so they understand, like, you know, there's no point in submitting a sterilization master file and not telling the auditor what the intended use is, you know, because they're going to be like, they don't know what this device is in that case, and it makes it really hard to assess. And with that packaging, naturally comes, they need to see about transit qualification. You know, they need to see how you've tested stability, performance. You know, with that, a key term to define the difference between, I think I see a lot of confusion, is between stability and performance testing. They're different things. You know, performance testing is essentially the interaction between that packaging system and products in relation to all of the stresses that it will experience in maintenance and sterilization handling. So that could be temperature, humidity, shock, you know, transport and stuff like that.
So
stability.
You have then maybe to simulate this transport and put some temp tails and put some of those things to prove that it's working.
Shake it.
1 meter and a half, you have to make it throw and fall and see if it's damaged or not. Yeah, I mean, all those tests that we have all done when we are starting to validate those kind of things, yeah.
Yeah, so you need to, so performance testing, you basically need to put it through some kind of, it's destructive testing typically. You need to put it through some tests to understand, and it's normal what you expect it to go through. So in terms of like it getting to the patient or the customer, it needs to go through a realistic kind of journey hazard simulation, essentially, is the another phrase for it. I've not seen that phrase used a lot though, journey hazard simulation. I think I use it and people look at me like, okay, talking about it. But basically it needs to be realistic to what is that device is expected to go through. So it needs to consider humidity, compression, shock, drop testing, all that kind of stuff. And then you need to see, this packaging withstands that. But then also stability testing, slightly different from that. And that stability testing is testing that the sterile barrier, like, you know, if it's a sealed product, maintains integrity over a time that is defined by that manufacturer. So if you say it's stable for 3 years, you need to make sure through your stability testing that it's stable for 3 years. That nicely links us to, again, ISO 11607, which talks about aging stability testing, like real-time aging or accelerated aging. The standard's quite strict on it shall be real-time aged, but it also does provide some conditions on, you know, you can use accelerated aging until real-time data is available.
Exactly.
So that's a kind of key point. I think people kind of think you can just do accelerated aging, but it's like you can do accelerated aging, but you need to do it on the back of real-time data becoming available, and you need to do that reassessment.
Yeah, so the idea, because I have done already that, so we have to manufacture some products, make sterilization, keep them on stock for maybe 6 months. After 6 months, we test. I mean, we have multiple products inside. So after 6 months, we test one. We verify it's working. Yep. So then we can say first the 6 month expiration date is fine. Then we wait again 6 months. Then we test another one. Then we say, oh, now it's 1 year. And then we test 6 months again. Then we wait, et cetera, et cetera. So we are going with what is going on the market. And for the moment, it's 6 months that is on the packaging. But now that you are manufacturing, we can say it's 12 months, then 24 months, et cetera, et cetera. So these are the kind of techniques, if I can say that, were used, but real time takes time, so it's
it does, yeah, it does, you know. But so it's important the manufacturers know that you can, you know, you need to use real time aging, but you can use accelerated with the kind of that promise of having real data. And there's an ASTM standard F1980, which gives a lot of good guidance on how to actually conduct accelerated aging testing for manufacturers, because the 11607 doesn't go into that much detail on it. It doesn't even reference that standard. It just says you must do real-time aging. You can do accelerated if you have a rationale. It basically just says that, you know, 8.3.3 of the standard kind of is quite light. So if a manufacturer wants to use accelerated aging, I would recommend using that ASTM standard, because that provides you a good basis for why you're doing something a certain way. And the process is exactly like you said. You just put something, you know, and if you're doing accelerated aging, essentially put it in an incubator, whack the temperature up, you know, let it sit there, you know, and then see what happens, you know, put some biological indicators in there and see, you know, see what grows, and kind of just check it periodically.
Yeah, so yeah, stability is an important topic. So you have really to take care of that. So it's mainly showing what is the sterilization time for your product. So one thing that I've always seen, I saw that mainly when you are using some kind of Tyvek packaging, whatever, they are always saying, oh, we guarantee a 5 years shelf life. So is the shelf life defined by the manufacturer, or is the shelf life defined by the component material, the people that are creating those kind of pouches or those machines that are sealing or those things?
Great question. It depends. So my answer first, always the manufacturer, generally. Shelf life is not a term that I use that much now. It's something that I've not seen a lot of it being used in. I think it's kind of, I don't know why, it's getting phased out a little bit. I typically use the term stable more than anything, stability. So the shelf life or the stability needs to consider, you know, all of those materials and that come into contact with it. And the standard, again, kind of specifically goes into it. It needs to consider the materials that come into direct contact with the device. So, you know, if it's like a wipe, for example, in that package, it needs to consider how that those kind of the surrounding materials that fold that in age with that device, basically, while trying to maintain its intended use, while not compromising safety, functionality, performance, for example. So it's basically that study of the standards go into quite a lot of detail on, you know, there needs to be a protocol before it. You need to say, right, we're going to test it after 3 months. We need to see if it's changed color. We're going to do some pH testing. We're going to, you know, do some various levels of inspection periodically. Again, one really important thing with this is having something we see quite a lot of in validations, I think, is predefined acceptance criteria. So important to have, like, on the protocol for any validation, stability, anything, is to say, this is what success looks like. And that is what you measure throughout that whole process. You know, so that could be no color change on the material, no strange odor, you know, kind of things like that. You know, no growth, for
no
example.
No green pasta that's inside.
It's not grown arms and legs, you know, kind of thing. You know, just it really depends on the device, but I would say it's the manufacturer that is legally responsible for it.
Exactly.
They need to, it kind of moves into that virtual manufacturer podcast we've done about.
Yeah.
Even if a manufacturer has a sterilizer, they need to control that sterilization.
I mean, they need to verify the documentation, verify that the validation was done, verify everything, because as you've said, the manufacturer is the one that is responsible for placing the devices on the market. So if anything happens on the market, you cannot say, oh, it's not my fault, it's the fault of them. No, because you have the obligation to verify mainly all that. Adam, so as maybe you had this kind of experience with notified bodies, so was there any kind of common issues or pitfalls that maybe notified bodies are identifying and that maybe can be helpful for the audience to say, oh, check this or check that, because it's mainly the low-hanging fruits that notified bodies are using to pick those non-conformities?
Yeah, there is always some. So I think what I mentioned earlier on about providing some labeling on the device. So, you know, provide the labeling, give the review in the notified body or UK approved body an understanding of what the device is. So tell them the intended purpose, show them the labeling, because, you know, it's still a technical document you're providing them. They still need to, if we think of the technical document, you're trying to give them an understanding of it for them to verify it. So I'd say providing a copy of the labeling is really important. One other area is it's again something that I've seen quite a lot before, but I kind of struggled to see. I've kind of had a few debates on it with notified bodies and stuff, but there's an expectation to provide a summary of change, okay, an assessment of change on an annual basis. I've been picked up on before. I just couldn't see where it was written down anywhere at the time. It might be written down somewhere now, but essentially what that is basically they wanted to see at the end of every year or at the start of a year, whatever you define, that you have assessed your manufacturing process for any change, you've assessed your sterilization process as well as bioburden counts, and you basically make that declaration to say nothing has changed. And that should form part of your sterilization master file as well. I've been picked up on that before and I just couldn't see.
In case people are writing that also on their SOP, their procedure, so if you write it, you have to have it. But yeah, if there is no specific requirement, so maybe it could be great for people to ask, where is the requirement for that? It's also what's happened during the audits. The audits, you are asking them, okay, thanks for this information, but can you point me the reference where it's written so that I can reference that on my document or text or whatever? And if there is nothing, then the notified bodies will be struggling a bit, like, oh, I know it's somewhere, I will find that for you, etc. And I suppose they will never come back to you. But this is mainly the thing that that you can ask, because some auditors have some assumptions because some other companies are doing that, that they expect that everybody is doing that. But if there is no requirements or no thing, or if you have not mentioned that anywhere on your SOP, so maybe it's good to have, but maybe it's not like, it's not worth a non-conformity then.
Yeah, so that's Yeah, I think it's a kind of hard one because it seems slightly this the and you know we said it earlier that this the entire concept of a sterilization master file is difficult because it's quite subjective because the regulations don't strictly say what's in there. So that's kind of why I kind of go with this thing of putting as much in there without moving too much into risk management, essential principles, and all that kind of stuff. You basically it's really limited to that manufacturing process, sterilization, packaging, transit, stability, you know. But with that, then another area that I think is so important, and I think it's something that I would recommend anyone for any type of technical document, is to provide summary documentations. And you know, and that is basically at the top of your file, and you know, the any full technical document has that one document, which is like your summary. But I don't know about you, Munir, but some of the technical files I've worked on recently, every technical file now is huge.
Yeah, like, yeah. They're just, they're 200 pages.
Massive. So even that one summary document to me is still not doing the job. So to me, typically, I prepare a summary document per section. So for risk management, I would have a summary document, which kind of acts as like a map, labeling, etc. So sterilization, I would say do the exact same, you know. So for the whole doc, for the whole file, have a summary which says we have determined that the aspects relating to stability or sterility that you need to see are packaging, transit, you know, performance testing, manufacturing process. Here's an index of where everything is in this folder, and you know, because notified bodies reveals that they have limited time, so it's kind of about making it as efficient as they can. You know, I have. When I review technical documents, I find myself getting annoyed if I can't find stuff, and I just start saying, I can't see this, you know? Like,
I mean, it's what notified boys are doing, because each time I see the document, I say, oh, I couldn't find this document. I say, but I placed that on 3.3.1. It's here, and it's mentioned, etc. Yeah, but it's not was not easy to find. But yeah, what you are describing for the sterilization master file is looks like the same as a technical file. It means that you are creating a document that is summarizing everything for bioburden, labeling, dose audit, dose mapping, etc. And then you are referencing where you can then find more details about that and have an annex maybe about where to find this information, etc. So yeah, this is something that can be important for that. Yeah, maybe, I don't know, but maybe we should suggest a template for a sterilization master file. So and then propose that to people, maybe with this episode. So if we have the chance to do that, we will try to work on that also to create that. Just with some examples of maybe what is needed, etc., and to help, and then to help you to do that. But as we said, there is no standard for that, so you can put whatever you want inside. But this is I suppose the minimum requirements. Anything else?
Last thing on it, just you know, quite easy again. Auditor low hanging fruit, as we say.
Yeah.
Calibration data.
Okay.
For any piece of equipment that you've used as part of your validation. For the sterilization process, if any of your reports say, you know, dosimeter one provides a calibration for it, to show that at the time of that it was done using a calibrated dosimeter. If you've got any kind of, again, any irradiation certificates and stuff like that that reference, say, a dosimeter or a certain sterilization house, you need to provide your technical agreement with that organization that have done that, and just make sure you're kind of, again, that word substantiating is this, like, there's two elements to it. There's substantiating your sterilization dose, but substantiating every bit of evidence that you put in there. Because you put it, as soon as you put it in a technical document, it can be subject to further review, you know. So I'd say any piece of equipment that they mention, calibration data.
Yeah, so it's funny because I'm auditing a lot of companies, and this is my low-hanging fruit. When I visit the manufacturing plant, I visit each step, and I look at each instrument that they are using for calibration. I look at the date on it, etc., because I say I will find for sure something that was not calibrated. Yeah, sometimes I have some companies that are really great and works really good, and I was searching everywhere, I can't find anything, so I was like, not like. But usually you always find some that are out of calibration, which is like normal. It's not like a major thing, but it's a bit normal for some companies that are. It can be a human error. So as long as it's not systemic and it's not like for all the tools, it's maybe one out of 100. So yeah, it can be a bit normal there. Okay. Yeah,
we call it the Vernier effect.
Yeah, because Vernier, exactly.
The, Vern, The vernier effect, because everywhere you go, there's a vernier caliper that's out of calibration.
Exactly. No, but yeah. It's important to notice that, because people think that it's a major issue. No, it's something that is quite normal for people. Yeah. Maybe the consequence can be major if you are using that for many months with a non-calibrated tool. But yeah, if it's just a one-time issue, it can be easily corrected.
Yeah, it would identify. Sorry, just the last one on that, Manuel. Yeah. On the not providing your calibration data on your validation fail sterilization master fail would most likely be raised as a major as part
exactly,
of the
this one, yes. It's different from a validation, because the validation will validate all the rest, will validate all what you will do after. But if it's doing the production and it was already validated before, so it's maybe less risky. So it's mainly the thing. But here, it's a case by case. So don't take my words like, oh, okay, Munir said it's fine. No, it's not.
Disclaimers.
Exactly. They'll take that small snippet and say, oh, when you say that, it's fine. No, it's not fine. It's just, it happened. So we'll just justify it, open a non-conformity and make that. Okay, Adam, so now that we have talked about that, so maybe you, how can you help, because you have experience on this, so how can you help maybe the audience about this kind of topic?
So I help organizations build sterilization master files, as well as I've got, you know, a lot of the devices I've worked on have been sterilized. So I can help with like remediation of it, doing some gap assessments to actually look at it from that notified body perspective and say, right, you're missing this, you're missing that, or checking like, you know, do you have calibration data for this, and kind of doing that review for them. So generally I would support organizations on doing that gap assessment or helping them compile a sterilization master file ahead of a notified body or UK approved body submission. But also on the other end of it, I also love helping manufacturers kind of limit what they need to do. Okay. You know, when you get a lot of class 1S that would try and submit the whole technical document to the manufacturer, where you can say, no, you can just kind of
exactly
make that a bit more concise and give them a bit less, you know, not because we're trying to hide anything, but, you know, only give what you have to. So my kind of primary role and the thing I like to do most is support manufacturers kind of doing that, and remediation, fixing stuff, or helping them build stuff.
Sure. So yeah, if you have any projects about sterilization or maybe some issues, you know, notified body about this kind of sterilization, so don't hesitate to contact Adam. So I'll put anywhere all the contact details on the show notes for LinkedIn profile and everything, and then you can have him, so no worry. And if you have any questions, you can also directly contact Adam if you need more precision, because we were not on full detail here. It was just an overview for this process. Okay, Adam, so really thank you for that. Thanks for all the details. I hope it will be helping a lot of people here. And then, yeah, I wish you a nice day.
You too. Nice to speak to you.
Thank you. Have a good day.
See you soon. Bye. Take care.
Munir Elazouzi, a medical device expert specialized on quality and regulatory affairs. My mission is to help you learn how to place a compliant medical device on the market.